Yesterday on Air Talk, we looked back at what was similar and what was different in this year 2020 from 1992, Rodney King's beating, the original acquittal of the officers in the case, the Christopher Commission, and the reforms that came afterwards, but also dramatically changed over the past nearly three decades is the composition of Greater Los Angeles itself. Significant numbers of African Americans moved from what had been historically black neighborhoods of Los Angeles to the Inland Empire, to the high desert communities in inland California. The Latino population of California has grown considerably as well. Asian American population, Korean American, Chinese American, most specifically, have also grown significantly. All of this has had an effect on the political dynamic of Greater Los Angeles, as well as relations between police and the communities they serve. Joining us to talk about these differences is Fernando Guerra, professor of political science and director of Loyola Marymount's Center for the Study of Los Angeles. He's also a member of our Southern California Public Radio Board of Trustees. Professor Guerra, great to have you back with us.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Your study, by the way, I should mention, was cited in the first hour, so what you were on to talk about with us last time. So let's talk about these shifts. First of all, what have we seen, just looking at numbers, in the composition of Los Angeles comparing 92 to today?
Well, we've seen, obviously, a continuing demographic shift. The history of Los Angeles is the history of demographic shifts from being a, obviously, indigenous and Spanish and Mexican and American city, and then increasingly becoming one of the whitest cities in the history of the U.S. Census. In 1900, L.A. ever recorded it in the non-immigrant, non-minority. And now you have it be one of the most multicultural cities. And of course, the African-American population is significant with the really the great migration that also came to Los Angeles in the 40s and 50s. In the 1960 census, there were more blacks than Latinos in the city and the county of Los Angeles. And by the 1990s, that had already stabilized and actually began to decline a little bit. But since then, it's declined both in absolute numbers and in percentages. And so in the 90s, it was probably about, in the city of Los Angeles, about 14%. Now it's way below 10%, and the trends will continue in that regard. So the black population in the city of Los Angeles has declined drastically in relative and absolute terms.
It's funny, growing up in Los Angeles, and part of it is the community where I grew up, Southwest L.A. and Inglewood, in my mind, L.A. was such a black city. And it was, you know, when I went to summer camp, I was the only white kid in the cabin of African-American boys joining me when I was a kid. And that boyhood experience for me, that's sort of how I thought of L.A., because all, you know, the parents of all those kids came for factory jobs and moved west from places like Louisiana and Texas. And that, to me, was just so much the fabric of Los Angeles. And now I think of it as such a Latino city.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we traditionally think of Watts as a black city, but now it's over 60% Latino. We think of Compton as a black city, but it's now over 60% Latino. We think of Inglewood as a black city, but it's now over 50% Latino. And you continue to see this trend. And that's one of the impacts, the movement of Latinos, especially Latino immigrants, first generation immigrants, moving into these cities and putting pressure on the rental stock. The typical African-American family is very American in the sense of a nuclear family with one wage earner, and it's not unusual for the immigrant families to have more than one or two wage earners. So while they may make a little bit less money than African-Americans individually, the household makes a lot more money and puts pressure on the rents, which then creates this dislocation in terms of housing. And I think that's one of the major impacts that it's been having on the African-American community.
We're talking with Loyola Marymount professor and director of the Center for the Study of Los Angeles at Loyola, Fernando Guerra. I welcome your calls because I'd really like to hear from longtime Angelenos what sort of shifts you've seen in your neighborhood. If you've stayed pretty much in place, what have you seen and how has that affected conversations with your neighbors, the political composition of the neighborhood you live in, just everything from day-to-day social interactions? What changes have you seen in your neighborhood over the course of the past nearly three decades? 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722. Fernando, one of my colleagues at KPCC, one of our editors who's originally from New York City, was talking in a meeting last week, and he was saying, you know, coming from New York and LA feels so different. This feels like the most segregated city that I've been in. And is that something that is borne out with our residential patterns?
Oh, absolutely. The vast majority of Latino school children attend very heavily segregated schools, as well as African Americans and as well as whites. While we are multicultural in the aggregate, in the microcosm, when we take a look at neighborhoods, we are still incredibly segregated. And sometimes the segregation index declines, but that's mostly because you're having Latinos and African Americans in a moment of transition in certain neighborhoods. And so, you know, every time you take a snapshot, you don't know if it's that's the permanent of what's happening, or it's just in transition with these demographic shifts that are constantly occurring throughout Los Angeles.
Well, can
incredibly mobile society in America, now internationally speaking, and LA is probably the most mobile of all the major cities. And so there's constant a movement within the neighborhoods.
We're talking with Fernando Guerra, Loyola Marymount professor. We'll talk with UCLA Dean and Professor Darnell Hunt coming up, and Pastor J. Edgar Boyd, the senior minister at First African Methodist Episcopal Church. Speaking of Los Angeles history and an institution that's seen change, First AME is nearly 150 years old. We'll continue in 90 seconds with your calls and more conversation on the demographic shifts of Los Angeles here on Air Talk. So good to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Reminder, Film Week tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Our critics Amy Nicholson and Claudia Puig review the new Judd Apatow film, The King of Staten Island, starring Pete Davidson, which is in part based on his life experiences. Spike Lee's new film, Da Five Bloods, starring Delroy Lindo, Clark Peters, Norm Lewis, and Isaiah Whitlock Jr. And we'll hear about Artemis Fowl from Kenneth Branagh. Those are just a few of the films that our critics review tomorrow at 11, Film Week, here on 89.3 KPECC. We're talking about the demographic shifts in Los Angeles. If you're like me and you've lived here for decades, you've seen very dramatic changes. The question is, well, what does that mean for political expression, for the ways that we relate to each other in greater Los Angeles? 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Dia in South L.A. says Black people in L.A. were pushed out, forced to move to places like Palmdale and Moreno Valley. They didn't want to leave, but because of structural discrimination against the Black community, low-income Black families had to move out. That's Dia. 866-893-KPECC. I'm joined by UCLA Dean of Social Sciences and Professor of Sociology and African American Studies, Darnell Hunt. Dean Hunt, thank you for being with us this morning.
Great to be here, Larry.
So from your perspective, how do you see L.A. changing?
Well, there's no question that the story of L.A., if you look at its history, is one of demographic change. The African-American population exploded in the first half of the 20th century with all of the migration from the South and in places where people were trying to escape Jim Crow and come to this new land of promise in L.A. W.E.B. Du Bois talked about L.A. as this Black Mecca when he came here in the early 20th century, and and saw black people living in relatively nice homes and certainly having life experiences that differed from black people in other parts of the country. Of course, as time progressed and structural racism reared its ugly head, we began to see that the dream wasn't quite what people thought it was. And in many ways, I think 1965 Watts riots, 1992 L.A. uprising, was kind of a turning point of sorts. And in fact, the 1990 census saw for the first time, I'm sorry, the 2000 census saw for the first time a decline, an absolute decline in the black population, which was again repeated with the 2010 census. So you did see people leaving the city for a number of reasons. I think the loss of jobs, deindustrialization, rising costs, police brutality, educational issues with the quality of our schools. There were any number of reasons that motivated black people to move to the Inland Empire and other places.
Dean Hunt, what about black home ownership? Because one of the things, and if I'm wrong, you can debunk this, but I thought that home ownership rates among African Americans in Los Angeles were considerably higher than what you saw in other metropolitan areas.
Well, certainly there was a point in history when that was the case, and I think that was one of the reasons that L.A. was so attractive as a destination during the periods of migration. But certainly today, with the extraordinary cost of living in L.A. and the challenges that many Angelenos have faced in terms of, finding, adequate employment, it's a tough place to be and to survive, and I think that's why people have started to return migration back to other places where the cost of living is more manageable.
One of the things Fernando Guerra, when he's talked about this issue before, talked about that there also been a return of some African Americans in Los Angeles to the states from where their families had originally emigrated, places like Texas and Louisiana and Tennessee and places like that. And just among, the world that you're in, Dean Hunt, have you seen much of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I can give you lots of anecdotes about people who participated in that type of return migration. It happens quite a bit. If you happen to be lucky enough to invest in the LA real estate market at the right time and your property appreciated in value, you could move to some of these other places that your ancestors came from and literally buy your home for cash. And people have been doing that. So I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing the decline in the absolute number of African Americans in Los Angeles to a point where their share has gone from 13-14% of the county population down to about 8% now.
We're talking with UCLA Dean Darnell Hunt. He's also professor of sociology and African American studies. Joining us as well, senior minister of the First African Methodist Episcopal Church of LA, Pastor J. Edgar Boyd. Pastor Boyd, thank you for being with us again. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Louis. Good to be here.
Your church, obviously, with a central historic role in African-American Los Angeles, how, if at all, has the demographic shift and African-Americans moving to inland locations affected your church and its membership?
Abjectly. And it has for all African-American congregations in Los Angeles, especially those who were organized over 75 to 100 years ago. With the shifts of persons moving out of the central Los Angeles area and surrounding communities in the county, to Palmdale, to Moreno Valley, to Pomona, and other places, it seems like those communities actually were built as a repository for the collection of the outward migration of African Americans. And so the congregation has gotten smaller. People are still straining. People are still making that sacrifice and meeting the challenge. They make that commute on a Sunday morning. So the services that the church normally and typically have done in prior years, looking at the involvement and participation of professionals and those who are dedicated to the ministry of the church, living in the community, or maybe across town or a few blocks away, those persons came in to help to provide leadership and provide resources for the feeding programs, for the after-school tutorials, and for the enrichment programs that add the quality of life for many persons who came through this facility and on our campus to get relief and to get support and help. So with those persons moving out of the area, they'll make that challenge and that commitment to come back in on Sundays and perhaps on Saturdays, depending upon what it is and what the frequency requirement would be. But the kind of help we've had before, that person, the number of persons we could actually get on the phone and call at a moment's notice, we need your help to unload food for a homeless family. We need your help to unload some furniture for somebody who might need the help. That kind of availability has been challenged and strained tremendously.
Yeah. I was still impressed if you've got people who are commuting long distance to come to services at First AME because of the significance of the church's role in their life, they're willing to make that trip. I'm inviting Angelinos to call Air Talk listeners to weigh in if you're a longtime resident. What sorts of shifts have you seen in your community? 866-893-KPECC. Let's talk with DB in South Los Angeles. Hi, DB. What changes have you seen?
I grew up in Venice in the 80s. My father, who was black, and my mother, who was white, gentrified to Venice, moved into Venice in the late 60s. And as a teenager, I was very angry with the noticeable gentrification that I saw. And then I then moved out and moved to South LA with my wife, who is white, and our two kids. And we're now gentrifying South LA. and we live a few blocks away from Florence and Normandy and kind of the epicenter of, you know, the LA riots of 92.
Yeah, where my great-grandfather lives, as a matter of fact, right near that intersection. So, DB, in looking at the shift, how did you feel like your sort of relationship with Los Angeles, your sense of the city, has it shift as places like Venice, like Silver Lake, like other places, have gentrified over time?
I think it's inevitable. Places change. It will never stay the same. And over time, it will shift. It's disappointing to see a neighborhood that you grew up in kind of shift and have the appearance of this polished and possibly less compassionate aesthetic. But it's just how things go.
I appreciate it, DB. Good to talk with you. Thanks so much. Longtime Angelino DB joining us from South Los Angeles, 866-893-KPECC. Pastor J. Edgar Boyd of First AME, Dean at UCLA Darnell Hunt, Loyola Marymount Professor and Director, Center for the Study of LA, Fernando Guerra with us. We're at 866-893-KPECC. With DB, I was just thinking as he's talking about leaving because of gentrification in Venice and then being part of gentrification in South Los Angeles. That is such an LA story. 866-893-5722. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. Fresh Air with Terry Gross comes up in just a few minutes after us today. Terry talks with Pete Davidson, the star of the new movie, The King of Staten Island, which will be reviewed tomorrow morning at 11 on Film Week on KPECC. We'll also have an interview, The Frame's John Horn, with director Judd Apatow. That coming up tomorrow on Film Week on KPCC, but Terry Gross with the star of that film, Pete Davidson, Saturday Night Live cast member coming up in just a few minutes. Right now, we're talking about the dramatic changes that have occurred demographically in Los Angeles. Manny, in Santa Ana, you've seen much change in your community, undoubtedly.
Yeah, no, a lot of, especially Santa Ana, right at the borderlines where Garden Grove, Fountain Valley. So you start seeing more Asian community, you know, more Asian families moving in, especially as soon as a home goes up for sale in Santa Ana, you know, hey, you know, we already know what kind of, you know, who's going to move in, and it's going to be Asians just because you know, out of respect, yes, all their churches, all their families are right by there as well. So I see, I've been living in Santa Ana since 2005. There's where I met my wife, so I decided to move there. I'm originally from San Gabriel Valley, La Puente, and my second home as well because of my dad's work was Boyle Heights. So you do see a lot of changes, a lot of family, a lot of friends that move out even further, and sometimes it has to do with rent. Sometimes
yeah.
It has to do, you know, people get pushed out. And, hey, you know, we can't afford here anymore. We got to go further and further. One example was my brother. My brother always had it hard. He's my stepbrother, same mom, different dad. So my brother always went from, he started in La Puente. Then he moved to Fontana. Then Rancho Cucamonga. Then Colton. Then further and further and further, closer to the desert. Why? Because he was always renting, and the rent was getting cheaper and cheaper, further and further. So, I mean.
Yeah. It's such a common, yeah, it's a common living situation in Southern California, Manny. Before I let you go, what is a historically Latino community of Santa Ana, which, you know, it's really, it's expressed even in the business core of the city, the Mexican-American heritage of the city and population. With more Asian Americans moving in, has there been acceptance? Has there been positive interaction in the communities?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely positive. it's the same thing, you know. Hispanic Latinos, you know, hey, they get tired of their taco burritos, so they'll go eat their, you know, we'll eat Vietnamese or Korean barbecue, or we'll eat different. And likewise, them themselves, you see them going to Santa Ana, going to get, you know, tacos, tortas, you know, you see that a lot. There's nothing wrong. I mean, it's just like you were asking, you know, if we see any changes, and yeah, there's changes.
Yeah.
Especially Santa Ana is hitting, if you notice, just the Orange County part. You know, you got Costa Mesa right on the bottom. You got South Coast Blanca not that far away from there. I mean, you could see some people that, you know, they want to live right as close to the beach, right as close to Newport Beach, and people forget, hey, Santa Ana is not that far. I mean, from my
house, it's a big city.
So, yeah, I could go on a bike ride off the Wash, and you'll be there. It's 8 miles away. You'll be at the beach in 45 minutes.
Yeah, all right. I appreciate it, Manny. Thank you for your call. Let me go back to Professor Fernando Guerra. He was describing his friend moving further and further out. I think all of us know people who have made that trek.
Oh, absolutely, and it's based on economics. And, you know, we talk about some of the larger African-American neighborhoods like Watts or South L.A. or Compton, but, you know, the DB who talked about Venice. I was growing up, Venice was a black neighborhood. Pacoima, incredibly African-American, and all those have really been completely changed, and it's this whole process of gentrification. My beloved childhood neighborhood of Highland Park is now being incredibly gentrified. And of course, there are social and economic reasons. One of the major ones is that while a lot of good industrial high-paying jobs were very adjacent to African-American neighborhoods in terms of Compton and South L.A., and it was easy for African-Americans to get jobs in that industrial belt of the Alameda Corridor and the 710. Sure, they were still getting paid less than whites, but they were still getting paid much above the average that African-Americans were making around the country. As we deindustrialized and those jobs moved away, blacks and a lot of others were isolated from the job opportunities, and then they had to begin to be mobile in terms of traffic and moving. And so a large part of the movement is also the lack of jobs in these traditionally African-American neighborhoods when they used to be abundant in the 50s and the 60s. And Larry, you know, there's also consequences to all this, and I'm a political scientist. And the political consequences, of course, is that you're going to see less black political representation. And interestingly enough, we've seen the decline of black elected officials. Not very much, but I think it's going to really progress in the next couple of years. I would make the argument today that blacks are better represented in Los Angeles than any of the 50 top American cities in relation to their population.
Wow. And that's because of the history of the city?
Correct.
Okay. Fernando, please hold that thought because I want to bring Dean Darnell Hunt of UCLA back in. Dean Hunt, are you concerned that African-American political representation will wane?
You know, this is an ongoing discussion in the black community. And I think there are concerns among some people who celebrate the tradition of civic engagement that African Americans have had in Los Angeles. African Americans have been among the most civically engaged in terms of voting and other ways of participating in the process. It's one of those situations where I think people are invested in trying to figure out how to maintain and to protect the presence of African Americans and their heritage in the city. This whole question of gentrification with the Crenshaw line, for example, going through the Crenshaw district down Crenshaw to the airport, property values have increased dramatically. We've seen just in a relatively short period of time, all kinds of transition in terms of who owns property in Lemur Park and Baldwin Hills, enclaves that for the last several decades have been have signified class status.
Yeah. Dean, and I'm so sorry that I need to conclude, but I thank you very much for being with us. UCLA Dean of Social Sciences Darnell Hunt. Our thanks to Pastor J. Edgar Boyd, Senior Minister of LA's historic First African Methodist Episcopal Church, and Professor at LMU, Fernando Guerra, Center for the Study of Los Angeles. Have a very good day.